sex and happiness, both enrich our lives. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Host Lori Handlers helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness. You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to another episode of Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness, your sex and happiness. And today, I have a great show lined up for you. I'm very excited to have the two guests that I have, because they have something to say about sex and happiness. They're not just two people who haven't been exploring it or pushing the envelope. They are definitely on the cutting edge of exploring their own sexuality and reporting back to communities and culture about what they've found out and what they are finding out. So I'm very, very excited to have them. Let me introduce them. Their names are Michael Rios and Sarah Taub. And Michael is a polyamory and social change activist who's lived in intentional communities for 50 years. That's a long time. He's helped start more than 24 nonprofits and social benefit businesses, and he's also a sex educator and workshop leader. And with a background in cognitive science, mindfulness practice, tantra, and martial arts, Sarah Taub works with communities and small groups to transform their most painful conflicts into empathy, creativity, and a shared path forward. She's been training facilitators in the ZEG Forum process for 5 years. For the last 15 years, Michael, Sarah, and their intimates have been co-creating intentional community, polyamorous relationship, and new culture events aimed at creating a culture based on love and freedom rather than fear and judgment. They live and work at Chrysalis Community in Washington, D.C., and Allegheny Crest International Village, their retreat center and community in West Virginia. Well, welcome to the show, both of you, Michael and Sarah. It is my pleasure to have you.
Lori, we're delighted to be here.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And you know, Chrysalis, that the name is Chrysalis Community. I just have to say, you know that the name of my company is Butterfly Workshops.
And no.
Yeah, and I used to have a whole corporate component called Chrysalis Systems. So, and I spent my day one time with a Smithsonian expert on butterflies running around the fields in Virginia, just waiting to talk to him to see if caterpillars had a choice. And he said no. And I said, good, because I don't think people have a choice. Either they just don't go into a cocoon and then a chrysalis and come out as a butterfly, but they're transforming all the time thinking that they're not, actually thinking they could resist it. So near and dear to my heart, the things that you've named things. So let's talk a little bit about how you got started in this. I'm sure that your seventh grade guidance counselors did not tell your parents that you were going to start intentional communities and experiment with polyamory and train people in the ZEG form when you grew up. So how did you find your way to this, each of you?
My background, my dad was an Army colonel. And my parents were devout Catholics, but they were the same. They were Pope Francis kinds of Catholics. They were radical social justice people, which is kind of odd today for military people. But back then, the military wasn't so politicized.
Right.
And for me, it was kind of a natural thing growing up that you know, their values made all the sense in the world to me. But the 30s radicals, social justice people like they were socially radical, but personally very, very conservative on sexuality and things like that. And of course, being part of the 60s, I had a few questions in that area.
Yeah, you and me both.
Uh-huh.
That's and, you know, great. That's a great description. Really a great description.
Yeah, and quite honestly, the polyamory, simply, if you're a devout Christian and you really believe what they're actually saying, monogamy makes no sense.
Which part of what they're actually saying?
Yeah, you're supposed to love everyone. There's nothing in the Bible about some kind of different kind of love for your sexual partner, and that there can only be one of them. It's like totally contrary to everything they say. So for me, it was just sort of like, okay, that stuff actually makes sense to me, and therefore monogamy makes no sense to me.
Got it. And you figured that out about when, like about how many years ago?
Well, try 1964 or earlier.
Wow. Okay. You're like one of those. In 1964, I was probably reading the Harrod experiment.
I don't think it was even out then. I actually had not seen anything about non-monogamy anywhere. I didn't know that anyone had ever had those thoughts, had no experience with it, no reference points whatsoever. It just was the only thing that made sense to me.
Wow, really a visionary you are, Michael. Really, that's great. Let's see from Sarah, how did you come upon this? Because I know that, you know, your guidance counselor didn't say anything to your parents either.
Not about this. So I was coming up in the 80s instead of the 60s, and I you know, there were a few tidbits. I read a lot of science fiction and fantasy, and it was very natural for me to always be thinking about how could we live in a better world? How could we be more just and more loving and more kind to each other? And I was fascinated by pictures of worlds that were inhabited by people like us, but that were different from our world. And the whole idea that there could be more love and more connection was really fascinating to me. And so I think I got interested in about age, I don't know, 10, 11, 12, in polyamory and in community. And it took me a while. I think in my late teens and early 20s, I had a lot of what I would call poly disasters, because I didn't have any role models. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know, well, okay, we can make up the rules as we go along. And I didn't realize that certain things just aren't very easy to do.
Right. And it takes a great amount of patience and tremendous communication skills and all kinds of things. But we'll get into that a little bit more. So I can imagine you had a few poly disasters as a young girl, trying to date many people or try and make it work your way when nobody else was probably conditioned to even look at it.
Absolutely. And I ended up agreeing, you know, giving away things that were really important to me. And we can talk more about that later, because I felt I wasn't entitled to live in this way at all. And that made me very unhappy. And then I made choices that weren't so great at that time.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, I was a serial monogamist because I liked to have sex, but it wasn't okay. I'm more of the generation of Michaels. So it wasn't okay to just want to have sex and not want to be in a relationship. And so I just got into relationship after relationship after relationship, and it's like, ugh, you know, 1 year too long, 2 years too long, 5 years too long. When really what I wanted to do was have the kind of life that you're describing. So I can totally identify. Well, let's give a definition to new culture. Like you've been developing this new culture, I don't know what to call it, culture or community or way of civilization for quite a few years now. What is it, and how might it affect people's lives if they join you?
We're both taking breaths at the same time to explain. Okay, I'll go ahead. So new culture is this idea that we could create a world where people actually get along, resolve conflicts, work out their problems, that we can make this world sustainable for our children, our grandchildren, and so on, that we can get rid of the negative or controlling messages that our upbringing has instilled in us, and replace it with something that's more life-serving.
Mm. Michael, you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. The things that make new culture unique are that it's designed... It's part of the insight is that lots of people have tried to do the things that Sarah just described. But what happens is you try it and it doesn't quite work. and things blow up and people get unhappy and it all falls apart. And there's two reasons for that. One, the mainstream cultures are very, very powerful living organisms, and they're designed to survive. So when you try and alter a culture, it alters you back. So one insight of new culture is that trying to change the mainstream culture is a very different prospect than simply creating an entirely new culture. And people tell us that when they come to one of our the new culture events, that it's like visiting a different country.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're in Brooklyn or then you go to Italy, it's not a problem to switch to the Italian culture after a while because everything there supports it. It has its own internal vitality. So this is so new culture is a consciously created culture that has all the dimensions of a full society. We look into every issue, not just sexuality. We look into issues, everything from economics to prison systems to you name it, including personal growth, sexuality, because we see those as the basis that if you don't get that right, nothing else is going to work well.
Sure.
Those are the ones that are going to come back and bite you every single time if you don't clean that house.
Yeah, and it does, and they do, so I understand. I live part of an intentional community also, which is focused on creating a new culture, but the culture is of curing aging and death, like not dying, not leaving this body. And so I often feel like I'm on the moon with my people, and when I bring people to visit us, they also feel like they just stepped into a whole new world. Like, what is this? You know, what do you mean you're not going to die? So I understand that. And there's a lot of issues between people with relationships often and with sexuality that sometimes take people out. They just take people away. So So I totally hear what you're saying. So what have you actually discovered in the culture? Since this program is sex and happiness, we're going to focus on the sexuality parts and the communication, the happiness parts. So what have you know what? I'm going to hold on. I'm going to wait on that question. We're going to come back from break with that question. So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Sex and Happiness. I got carried away here. I'm so into this. This is Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and today I am talking with Michael Rios and Sarah Taub, and they're creating a new culture, and they're creating a culture based on many things, but being able to sustain, we'll call it like humanity or livability, and that's a big, big task. So when we come back, we're going to talk about what they've discovered about sexuality. Stay tuned. Sexual.
My question for people right now is, if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, or maybe you know women or a woman who could use this, because many women say that their feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally or as often as they'd like. So I want to tell you about Zestra, because Zestra was developed to meet this much needed option for women. Zestra safe and a patented blend of botanical oils and extracts, and it's created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts free, fresh, and safe from light. And with application of Zestra, it starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes. And at about 10 minutes, there's something called the Zestra Rush. And that can last up to about 45 minutes. The great news is that Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. Now, I'm somebody who believes that all women deserve sexual satisfaction. That's why I do this show, in case you hadn't noticed. So I believe that men and women deserve sexual satisfaction. So if you're a woman who isn't getting that kind of arousal response that you want, please call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please remember to say you heard about Zestra from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life? get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Lori Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Lori Handlers. Only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
I want to talk to you about the craziest and most inventive sex toy or sex enhancement that I've come upon in a long time. It's called Love Rider, L-U-V-R-Y-D-R. That's L-U-V-R-Y-D-R, Love Rider. So I know the couple that invented it. They never intended to invent it. They stumbled upon it. And isn't that how most things go in life? The subtitle to Love Rider is Grab the Bar and Ride Your Lover Wild. And I want to tell you that I've had multiple experiences with Love Rider. I've taken it all around the world, and I've had lovers experience it. I've given it to them overnight and told them to come back and tell me their experience with it, and every one of them comes back with a raving report. It's a harness that the person receiving puts around their shoulders, either forwards or backwards, whatever. It depends on what position you want to use the Love Rider in. And the person who's giving, the penetrator, takes the handlebar like they're riding a horse, and they lean back and they get amazing angles of penetration from using this device. It's hard to describe, but I want to encourage you to go there and look it up. Listen, my lover gave it a 5.5 stars out of 5. That's all I got to say. So go to loverider.com and look for this beautiful invention, and you can use my name if you call them, or you can use my code Butterfly Workshops, letting them know that you heard about Love Rider through me. That's loverider.com, L-U-V-R-Y-D-R. We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Lori Handler as your host, and I'm privileged today to be interviewing Sarah Taub and Michael Rios, and they're really working at something and probably playing at something as creating a new culture, a place that feels that it could be more sustainable to human life. And there's a lot of challenges, which they discussed in the first part, just challenges about being a new culture that's surrounded everywhere by an existing culture that's not as open. So what have you two learned about sexuality that you didn't know before? It's like a discovery, and maybe it's different from what most people think they know about sexuality.
Well, the first thing, Lori, and maybe some of your listeners already know this, but sexuality is such an integral part of our lives, you know, the ability to have pleasure in our bodies. And the mainstream culture puts shackles on that, puts chains on that. And so when people aren't able to access their own happiness and their own pleasure, well, it's really easy to control and manipulate them by fooling them as to how they're going to get that those needs met.
Right, like buying a red sports car or
exactly. Yeah.
Smoking cigarettes.
I have a personal hunch that as polyamory becomes more common, consumerism is going to drop dramatically.
Yeah, well, people will be too busy making love.
Absolutely. You know, you're sitting there getting off on in every sense of that phrase without spending a dime.
Yeah, I love it. Maybe sex toys will have a real boon in
in production, but that might be it. And lubes, you know, things like that. Things that support a making love culture rather than a making war or a competition or a, I have to have, consume everything in sight. That, he who has the most toys wins kind of thing.
Absolutely. So what we are doing here in New Culture is one of our principles is that people are at choice in what they do. They get to choose in every moment how they interact, how they participate, what they, you know, and this really encourages people to just have personal freedom in a way that many people have never had before. You know, the mainstream culture imposes so many boxes on us. And then when people get in touch with their own authentic internal truth, something amazing happens. And sexuality is one path to that. It's not the only path. But we find when people are radically at choice, it's extremely transformative.
It gives them a way to explore parts of themselves that have been off limits in many ways. And so that what happens from there is that they get people come into New Culture programs and events with all kinds of preconceptions about themselves, about sexuality, about everything else. And I can remember one, interestingly enough, oftentimes we invite the most powerful presenters we can find into make presentations. And I can remember one presenter came in one time and did some fabulous job teaching a particular topic and was saying and was talking to us afterwards and said, "Wow, there's this one guy I'm really attracted to. I guess I'm not allowed to interact with him because I'm a presenter." And we said, "Why not?" And she said, "Well, won't people talk?" I said, "No, they're too busy fucking."
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
I can just do whatever I want. I said, "No one will care. You know, you do what's right for you, as long as you're not being violent, as long as you're not violating somebody else's boundaries. And the most that's going to happen is people will applaud."
Wow, I got it. That's great. That's really great. So I see. So there's a lot of freedom is what you're saying. Lots and lots of freedom. So,
but the freedom is coupled with an enormous amount of training. We train people in communications. We train them in setting boundaries. We train them how to be transparent. We train them to do all kinds of literally dozens and dozens of different personal skill sets that allow them to have a full human life that does not impinge on somebody else's full human life.
Mm-hmm.
That's learning the tools. That's why so many free love experiments blow up, is because people don't have the basic communication skills. They don't have the basic self-knowledge. They don't have the basic understanding about consent, about boundaries, about setting limits, about respecting other people's space.
And along with those skills, we set up cultural structures like the Zeg Forum process that you were interested in that encourage this kind of sharing, this kind of transparency and authenticity, that train people in being able to hold space for each other, being able to appreciate each other's truth, even if it's not their own truth,
mm-hmm.
because that's the path forward. You know, when two or more people run into conflict and, you know, things look like they're going to break down, that's actually where the most exciting opportunity is, because in our culture that we're creating, that means that there's something deep in each of them that's getting triggered, and it means that they're about to have an amazing healing on that if they just stick with the process and follow it through.
That is such a great way to look at breakdown and to look at conflict. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, one of the things we tell people is if you come to summer camp and you don't get severely triggered, you missed something really important.
and summer camp is there's a number of New Culture summer camps across the country. We're not the only people doing this. And so it's a 10-day dive into this way of living. And, yeah.
It really is like moving into a different country. One thing to be really clear about Sarah and I did not invent new culture. I ran across it in 1999, and I brought her to the summer camp in 2002. And that what's one of the most amazing things about new culture is that there really is nobody who's in charge. It is completely grassroots. There's no gurus, there's no dogma, there's nobody who can tell you you're doing it right or wrong. It's this network of people who are experimenters. We try things out. We, you know, and we share the results so that I can say, Laurie, wow, when I tried this, this is what happened. But I'm not telling you, Laurie, this is what you should do.
Right.
I'm just letting you cherry pick my experience.
I get that. So who did create it, though? I mean, was there an original creator?
There really wasn't. There were some folks who had been to the Zen community in Germany and thought, this is pretty cool. We should try and bring some of that insight and energy to the U.S. And so they came back. And the only thing I could think, it started around 1995, and I was first there in 99, not that long afterwards. But there were virtually none of the original people left. The only thing I can think of, and I've been trying to figure this out for years, is that the original people were your traditional, you know, theoretician types who like, oh, this is how we should do it. You know, and those are the types that usually become gurus.
Right.
Okay. And then for whatever reason, the group kind of got out of their control.
Yeah, for the reason that they were setting people free. Yeah, go ahead.
And they left. And all the original people left. And as a matter of fact, I did find an article written in 1998 by one of the original founders who said, oh, new culture has really become degenerate and it's now going nowhere. 2 years from now, no one will have ever heard of new culture, and that'll be the end of that.
Well, that
new culture
happen.
Is now all over the country.
Wow. That didn't happen exactly that way. So I understand it got off to that kind of a start, but you know, a lot of things get off to that kind of a start. So, and anything that's really worth doing is worth hanging in there, and maybe the original creators couldn't hang in there, but somebody could. So it's,
well, that's what's cool, is it wasn't any one somebody.
Yeah.
It was just a network of people trying things out, being open with each other, sharing their failures, sharing their successes, and having the humility to assume that other people out there knew more than we did.
Right.
And so, you know, whereas most organizations, you know, that are, you know, social change oriented, you know, have their own staff that give workshops and things like that to teach you their truth.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our presenters are people we've never met before, but we've heard that they got cool things to tell us, and so we're sitting there all ears.
Got it.
And maybe we buy the thing and maybe we don't.
Yeah.
But there's this constant influx of new ideas and new energies. You know, we literally have no gurus. And as a matter of fact, other groups will give you answers. We're just really good at asking questions.
Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like to me. So that's great. Well, I want to ask you two things. I want to ask you like a personal thing, and I want to ask you a culture thing. So I'm going to ask you the culture thing, and then we'll see where we go with that, and then I'll ask you about some of the personal stuff in the third segment, if that's how it goes. So let's talk about Zeg Forum, and let's spell it. It's Z-E-G-G Forum. And what does that mean, and how do you use it at your events?
Absolutely. So Forum was a process developed at Zeg Community and its sister communities in Germany. And Zeg is a acronym that stands in German for Center for Experimental Cultural Design. I couldn't speak the German for it, but that's what it is. And basically what happened there is the original folks, there were a group of free love radical explorers trying to transform themselves and their culture. And they were trying to do things together, and they kept running into bumps in their process. People would be blocking decisions, stuff would be happening, and they realized there were all kinds of things going on under the surface. So they developed this process that would allow everything to come out that was under the surface.
Mm.
And So the way it works is that the community gathers and sits in a circle, and the circle actively brings themselves into a space of compassionate witnessing. And the center of the circle becomes a stage where anything can happen. So a person will get up and get into the center of the circle and just express whatever is authentic or live and true for them in that moment. You can bring anything, love, fear, joy, one person at a time. And there are facilitators whose job it is to help that person go a little deeper. So, you know, in any community, there are voices and perspectives that are popular, that are privileged, that are held, you know, that people are happy to share. And there are other ones that nobody wants to hear, that get pushed to the side, but they don't go away. And the same is true inside any individual. We have parts that we love to show. Like right now, I'm very happy showing you, you know, my excited presenter self. But, you know, my unhappy, anxious, trying to get things done self is still here, too. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't know that person, that part of me is there, it still impacts my feel. Impacts the whole. So the forum is the place where we get to see those marginalized parts. And we get to encounter them with love and appreciation. It's as if, especially in cases of conflict, you know, when two voices are trying to be heard at the same time, it doesn't work. It's like an orchestra of beautiful instruments all playing at the same time, and it's this horrible noise. But in the forum, you get to hear each instrument, each voice at a time, and you get to appreciate it for its beauty, without having to take sides. Mm-hmm. So, you know, suppose I'm having a fight with my lover's lover and I get up in the forum and I share how frustrated I am. Nobody needs to take sides as to whether I'm right or the other person's right. They're just like, oh yeah, frustrated. I've been frustrated like that before. I get it. I get you.
Well, I have to tell you that the two or three times I've participated in the Zeg Forum were very powerful, both in I saw somebody that you were facilitating when we were in Hawaii that was crippled with fear, and she just had this huge breakthrough with herself and being able to have compassion for her fear and move through it. And then a time when you weren't there, but I did experience it, was somebody was criticizing the leader of one of my, let's just say, one of my powerful communities, one of the leaders of the ISTA community, and it was done in a very humorous and, although critical, way, and it was really received by the person that it was aimed at quite well. It was a lot of graciousness in receiving the reflection, we'll call it. So I've seen it be very effective and very successful just in the limited times that I've experienced it. And I think it's a really great tool, not to be confused with the Landmark Forum or the Forum Corporation. There are so many things that have the name Forum. So this is not that forum. This is the Zeg Forum. I like to keep that. What?
Yeah. Sorry. The beautiful thing about Zeg Forum, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I could. It was just that you were, I don't know, something was happening there, but go ahead.
So it's really, the Zeg Forum is about the community more so than about the individual. Mm-hmm. So about, although it can have a real therapeutic impact on the person who's sharing, because getting in touch with marginalized parts of ourselves is therapeutic, the intention is to clear the community field, to bring everyone together into this space where we all know more about each other. We know what's happening under the surface. And then there's an opportunity after the person's has gone through their piece in the middle for community members to get up and share one at a time what they think is still unspoken in the field. Then that could be something they think that person hasn't gotten yet, or something about how that they received that sharing, or something about how it relates to broader cultural or societal forces. So it's beautiful. This is my favorite playground to teach to groups, and I've seen it utterly transform conflict situations.
It's just very by powerful. Very powerful.
To my mind, one of the most powerful dimensions of Zeg Forum is that I think of it as like having pillow talk with 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
That people say in forum things that normally they would only say to a lover, and that probably only after they were a little sleepy and the barriers are going down and they're really getting undefended. But to have that with an entire group of people, the compassion that that generates, the mutual support energy that is created by it, is unmatched by anything I've seen anywhere else.
Wow, that's a very strong statement, and I really, you know, now I'm saying, I need to have you come to my community, and that's going to take a little doing, but I'd love to see something like this happen there. But I don't want to get lost in that in this moment. I want to bring us to another break, and then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about your relationship and what you've learned in having a polyamorous relationship together and separately, and you know who you were when you met. Like, I can imagine you were two very idealistic people, knowing what you wanted and what you wanted to create, and that you've been through many changes in the 15 years that you've been together. So we're going to take a short break here, and we'll come back to that. So this is Laurie Handlers. You're listening to Sex and Happiness. We're really talking about sex and happiness. We're talking about the idea of a community being able to have freedom and run the way the individuals want to see themselves run and take responsibility for, and how you work that out. And then we're going to talk about two individuals who've been working at this, about Michael and Sarah and how their personal relationship has evolved. So this is all really interesting and definitely cutting edge stuff. So I hope you're at the edge of your chair, because I am. We'll be right back. As a sex and happiness coach, I understand that increased sexual participation intensifies sexual responsiveness and desire, as well as overall health and well-being. My experience with a Sibian has personally increased my sexual response, and I can now train women to use this machine to have peak orgasms as often as possible. I strongly believe this will add to their health and well-being, whether they have a partner or not. The beauty and the miracle of the human body is that it adapts and changes much more rapidly than people change their beliefs or their opinions. The Sibian can make any woman's body more resilient with each peak orgasm. Sibian is an amazing experience, often described as the Lamborghini of sex toys. If you're a woman and you can get yourself to look at Sibian, you should do so. It won't take away from your partner. It will only add. Trust me on this. I love my Sibian. Go to Sibian.com. That's Sibian.com. Or call 1-800-253-6135. That's 800-253-6135. And say Laurie Handlers told you about Sibian. And by the way, if you do have a partner, ask about Venus for Men. That's Venus, V-E-N-U-S, for Men.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Laurie talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Laurie's CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Laurie is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Laurie sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn CD by Laurie Handlers, go to www.shamanicrelease.com. ButterflyWorkshops.com right now.
Do you want to deepen your intimacy while being on the perfect vacation? I'm talking about an all-inclusive vacation with a nude beach, a prude beach, and an exceptional nightlife and plenty of entertainment. In really fun classes every day, I will take you deeper and deeper into couples sensuality, into intimacy, and enhanced communication as the week progresses. I also will offer private or semi-private sessions by appointment. I'll offer sessions in sex magic, G-spot stimulation, female ejaculation, and men's ejaculation choice. When?
October 14th to the 21st, 2017.
Where? Hedonism 2 Resort in Negril, Jamaica. For more information or to book your room, call Tom's Trips at 800-285-0853. That's 800-285-0853. Please book now. I can't wait to be with you in Jamaica. We're back with Sex and Happiness once again. This is Lori Handler as your host. And today I feel tremendously grateful that I'm talking with Michael Rios and Sarah Taub. Like, they're not just two guys in a diner, you know, like they're people who are really trying to make a difference in their own world and take responsibility for that. And there's a lot to be said for that. It's certainly a topic we've talked about on this show before, but not in the way of a new culture or in the way of community, and it's big. So what can you tell us about your relationship, which started 15 years ago or before, and how you were then and what you've learned now, and how did you Sarah, you told us before that you had all these poly disasters when you were growing up, and how did you make your life not disastrous?
Wow, great question. So I think the first step to having poly non-disasters was finding other people who actually wanted to be poly. And I achieved that just before I met Michael. I was in a poly triad for a couple of years, and that was going really well in the sense that we were all on board with being poly, and we were working on a relationship together, and that was great. And what wasn't going so well is that I think we all had this idea in our minds of how we should relate, like we should all love each other equally. And we were trying really hard, but it wasn't like that.
Sure.
And it was just, that can be really difficult to navigate, the difference between ideal and reality. So when Michael came along and I started connecting with him, he just brought with him this field of complete permission to be exactly who I was. And I was just blown away by that. I'd never experienced anything like it. And I'm like, oh my God, I want to be with this man. He's amazing. And so I started relating with him while I was still in this other relationship. And then after a period of time, he became more of my focus. And I moved in with him and we started creating community in 2002.
And so what if you, okay, that sounds really good. And then you started connecting with other people. And he started connecting with other people, and you had complete permission. And then did you feel the same way about granting him complete permission, or did you have a little butterfly in your stomach, or...
I'll tell you something. When I first moved in, his oldest offspring was living with us, and Davi was 15 at the time and was not identifying as poly, and which they now do. And their first, they brought home their first girlfriend and introduced me as, oh, yeah, that's Sarah. That's my dad's fourth girlfriend.
Oh.
Ouch. However, within another year, they had plenty of poly relationships.
I see.
So Michael was still relating with other people, and so was I. We had no monogamous pair bond, period. We did sort of pair bond, but not in a monogamous way.
Uh-huh.
And we refer to each other as nesting partners. That means that we share a home and lots of projects and lots of, you know, basics of life. And we have other partners that are equally as important to us.
And do all the partners know each other? Are you one of the kinds of bonds that everybody can sit at the same table and go out together and do that? Or are there some that one doesn't know or the other doesn't know?
Everybody knows. We consider ourselves network poly. And, you know, some of us are best buddies, cuddle all together. And some of us are like, yep, I know you. I respect you. You're dating my partner. And that's cool. And we're different people.
We just don't have that much in common. Yeah. Now, there may be people that one of us is involved with that the others don't know. But that's always because, for example, like I have a couple of lovers that I see once every year or two. And usually in some very random distant city. So while my partners all know about each other, it's possible they might never have met in that kind of situation.
Right, right. I can identify more with that than with everybody sitting down at the table together. That's just me. I haven't gotten there yet, but I'm working on it.
Well, no, the sitting down at the table together thing, in my experience, is more the exception than the rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people I relate to, part of the reason I relate to each person is they're very, very different from my other partners.
Right, right.
And so, you know, my respective partners may have next to nothing in common. So there's not a whole lot of Three Musketeers or Five Musketeers energy around.
I see. Okay. That helps to clarify. It really does help to clarify because, I mean, you know, I always refer to my poster child best friend, Kamala Devi, who's the queen, to me, the queen of polyamory. And she has a pod of 12 to 16 people, and they're like dolphins. I mean, they're together a lot of the time, and everybody seems to get along. And there's been a few times when that wasn't the case, but there's a whole pod of people that all, you know, play together, do things together, whatever. And so I always wonder about. They do spend a lot of time processing. I will say that.
So
I don't know how that works.
I want to add a few pieces to that. So I do have that connection with my other partner, Harold, and one of his other lovers. And that's really lovely. And I enjoy that a lot. And there are other metamors, that's other my partner's other partners that I don't relate to in that way. But, you know, we're all friendly. I think a big change happened in our relationship about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a time when, you know, Michael and I, Michael had pulled back from me a bit because at that time I was lashing out in anger a lot and it wasn't working for him.
Uh-huh.
We were still living together, but he had created a bit more distance. And at that time he met his other partner, Jonica, and she came to live in our house. And that was a really tough time for me. I was used to having access to Michael whenever I wanted to connect with him. And now there were times when he was with Jonathan and not available. And that's when I really realized how much I was using him as an emotional security blanket.
Wow. That's a lot of responsibility taken right there.
Absolutely. And I started realizing, oh my God, when I feel anxious and upset, I want to go touch Michael and hold him. And it doesn't really have to do with him as a person. It had to do with the reassurance that I needed for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I started meditating, and that process has just helped sustain me and brought so much growth over those 5 years.
That's so great. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that allows us to stay connected is that the boundaries that I was setting back then were not done in anger, and they were not, you know, it was a pulling away in one sense, but not a pulling away in another. I loved her very much. I still love her very much. And it was clear to me that what was going on was just dramatically unhealthy.
Yeah, so you set a boundary. I could hear that. Does Jonica still live with you? Is she still involved with your lives?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, very much so.
She's
one of our co-organizers.
Yeah, we all of our retreats that we create together, she's one of the prime movers and shakers. She's awesome at logistics.
That's wonderful. So,
Yeah.
Well, I have to admire you. I have to applaud you. I want to acknowledge you and say thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being willing to come on the show and share about it. Your comfort with who you each are actually comes into the room before you start to speak. Like a real presence of self-esteem and commitment to what you're about and the comfort with which you're operating that isn't really part of the greater culture, but you're comfortable, and that feels really good over here. So I just want to say that to you. Yeah. I mean, I know that about you, Sarah, anyway, but I'm both of you together, and also I've experienced Harold, and he has that same comfort. It's great. It's exciting, and it makes me want to come to New Culture Camp. So one day when I have a minute, I'll come for 10 days.
We would so love to have you.
Yeah, I'd love to be there. So let's tell people how they can get in touch, because some people may get very turned on by this show, and they're going to want to know about the community and how to get in touch with you all. So let's give some websites and spell some things out so that people can reach you.
Probably the simplest way to find us is this. The part of New Culture that we do is called Center for New Culture. And the website is just those initials, CFNC, Center for New Culture.
.us.
CFNC.us.
Okay, so that's really important, the .us on the end, because people will go to com otherwise.
Yeah, not .com. CFNC.us. Now, once you're there, it has links to the New Culture Summer Camp. It has links to some of the poly events. We have a whole series of events four times a year called Polyamory for All Seasons. There's a spring, summer, fall, and winter event.
We do Zeg Forum at all of our events.
Yes.
Okay, that's
so
great.
So there's contact information on our website, and if you want to emailing us at info@cfnc.us, or probably just about anything at cfnc.us,
right,
will get to us.
Right.
Okay,
you can also
great.
Send Sarah. If you want Sarah particularly, do Sarah@cfnc.us. If you want me, do Michael@cfnc.us.
Okay, and Sarah is spelled with an H, so it's sarah@cfnc.us, or Michael, spelled the way Michael is spelled, at CFNCUS. Well, you know, I'm presenting at a Polypalooza this year, and I know that's going to be quite an eye-opening experience for me. So I'm going to do that, and so maybe I'll set aside time for next year in 2017 to be at Community for New Culture with you. I think it sounds awesome, and I love the way you two are.
Thank you.
That's what I have to say. Yeah. So that's it for today's show, everybody. Thank you so much, Sarah and Michael, for being with me on the show and giving me some enlightenment.
Lori, thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, I needed that enlightenment myself, and you're so welcome. Everybody, tune in next time when I will have another amazing guest talking to you about sex and happiness. That's your sex and your happiness, how you can become sexier and happier. I wouldn't want it any other way. That's all I want for you. They go hand in hand, and you have the birthright to be happy in your own sexuality. So I'm signing off for Sex and Happiness Now. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Oh,